Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship. The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEACtion with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
Asbury Methodist Village in Montgomery County takes senior living to the next level, creating extraordinary opportunities for a fulfilling future. Work your brain and body in our new wellness center. Stroll our expansive campus and 17-acre nature preserve. Stay sharp with our resident-run college and find so many new ways to get involved and make a difference for others. Anticipate more from your retirement. Visit AsburyMethodistVillage.org today. Your future's here. Equal opportunity housing provider.
Welcome to the Fantrax Toolshed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From dynasty to prospects to redraft, we got you covered. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clay.
Welcome into episode 174 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We are continuing our Dynasty ranking series today. Went over our outfield prospect rankings last episode, so go check that out. And we also had a nice FYPD mock draft on Monday, too. That's episode 172. Check that out as well. And we will be in our Dynasty outfield rankings today. Always a fun position. So much elite talent and depth at this position. It's going to be a lot of fun. And with me to break it all down, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Not too much. A tornado watch here in South Carolina. A bad storm come through, and luckily it didn't get too bad. It seemed like it would, and the radar seemed bad, and I was scared we weren't able to record, but we end up okay. And you're at the opposite end up there, aren't you? A bunch of snow, so.
Yeah, it snowed today. And
we had a weird, like, pressure system. It was, so, like, it was 70 degrees here today, but literally 10 miles north, it was, like, 50 degrees. So that was what they said was, like, that weird, like, it was what caused the storm to be so bad. It was just bizarre. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, weather's weird, man. It's just so weird. Like, today it was snowing and sleeting, and it was, like, that, what we call the wintry mix, where it's just, like, a bunch of crap all at once. And then tomorrow it's going to be like mid-50s and everything's going to melt. It's just been, Mother Nature is, I don't know what's going on with Mother Nature this year, but she's a little bit off her rocker right now. Yeah. And everywhere, not just, you know, northeast, southeast, midwest. Like I was recording with in this league with Welsh and Bogman, like the one of the nights on the week before Christmas. And it was like 50 degrees here in Maine, or at least in the 40s. This is late at night. And it was like 16 degrees where Bogman is in Houston. So it's just, which is weird. I don't know why Maine was warmer than Houston, but I was throwing that freeze they had out there. But all right, enough weather talk, though. We got some baseball chatter to get to here. Before we do, the usual housekeeping here. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. And our podcast is at ToolShedPod. Notice a different handle there. So at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy this podcast, please write and review. Check out my Patreon for more work from me and Chris's Substack for more work from him. And make sure to check out all the other great stuff that Fantrax and Fantrax HQ have to offer. 2023 Fantasy Baseball Leagues are open and in full swing, and our 2023 Fantasy Baseball Draft Kit kicked off earlier this month as well. A lot of fun stuff in there. All right, let's hop right into it here. Again, this will be just the Dynasty Pars. We already did our Outfield Prospects episode. And right off the bat, you know, Chris alluded me to a what he called a spicy rank to start off. So we'll start there. So, Chris, who are your top 10 dynasty outfielders?
All right. So I debated one and two pretty heavily and ended up at Acuna at one. So Ronald Acuna Jr. at one, Julio Rodriguez at two, followed by Jordan Alvarez at three, which those are my top three overall. So that's fun. And actually, Tatis is four overall. So Fernando Tatis Jr. in the fourth spot, followed by Kyle Tucker, Aaron Judge, Mookie Betts, and you may not have noticed, I hadn't said this name yet, but Juan Soto is at eight, which Eric hates, and I'm sure it won't be popular among listeners or readers, but Juan Soto at eight, Bryce Harper at nine, yep, still hanging there with him, and Corbin Carroll at 10.
Yeah, man, it was funny because I didn't see it at first, and Chris was like, oh, you haven't seen my spicy rank yet, and I'm like, oh, let me go look. We have this spreadsheet that we've been putting all of our rankings on for all of our episodes. We can just quickly look at it side by side. And I was kind of like scrolling down. I didn't catch it at first. And I'm like, oh, get a little Juan Soto there at eight. But so yeah, we'll discuss that here in a second here. So mine, the top 10 is so, really the top 14, 15, 16 are really, really fun names. And you can really order them many different ways. But I had a similar debate at the top there. J-Rod, Acuna. I've gone back and forth 5,000 times on this. At this very second, I have J-Rod 1, Acuna 2. That could very well switch, you know, next week. So I think J-Rod might be, I don't know. I don't know who has a higher up here upside. We'll get into that. But I'll go J-Rod at 1, Acuna at 2 for now. But if Acuna comes back and the power comes back, I can see him leapfrogging a J-Rod. But we'll see. I have Soto at 3, Tucker 4, Tatis 5. Again, that was another trio I kind of got back and forth on. Jordan Alvarez at 6, Aaron Judge 7, Mookie Betts 8, Bryce Harper 9. So both of us keeping Harper inside the top 10. And then I have Mike Trout still at number 10 overall. So let's get into that, Chris. We'll start with Juan Soto. I'll admit, Soto is a hard one to rank. And I did have that thought cross my mind where I was like, all right, maybe he is, you know, I don't want to say a better real life player than fantasy, because I think that's kind of a little bit unfair, but it's kind of true as well, where it's like, all right, we know he's one of the, you know, the best hitters, you know, best, you know, guys to have on your team that you'll build around. But, you know, all the walks, it sounds like we've talked about this with prospects and, you know, guys that have these super, super high walk rates, you know, it limits them a little bit with their overall value. And I think that's been the case for Soto. It takes away, you know, at bats for, you can put balls in play, get more RBI, get more home runs, etc. So it's a fair, you know, conversation to have. Like, all right, does he need to be dropped down a little bit? I yet to do so. I want to see, you know, with the shift, I think the shift bands, I think he's going to be a big beneficiary of that. He was still putting up great, you know, contact rates, barrel rates, hard hit rates, second half of last year, even if the surface stats weren't quite there. He was a bit unlucky. So I'm waiting to see, all right, what does he do this year before I maybe drop him down a few more spots? But why don't you go ahead and give your reasoning why you moved Soto down to 8?
Well, part of it is, I think, the better real-life asset. And even in an OPP league, I mean, I think there's more value for sure than a batting average league, despite the fact that he's been a 287 career hitter. It's still a good average. But at the end of the day, we've just never seen, like, the elite power and speed out of him. His peak season is still going back to 2019 when he hit 34 home runs and stole 12 bases. Has not eclipsed 10 stolen bases since then, nor has he broke 30 home runs since either. And we've looked and we've seen, so last year, 27-6. And in that top 10 spots, like, you really need to get good power and speed. And you just have to, like, Soto's sprint speed's not good at all. I mean, he was 33rd percentile sprint speed last year. So it's not like he's going to be a great runner. He's going to come back and steal a ton of bases at all. And you look, and he's never really been an elite speedster. We've known that. But right. You also look at this lineup that he's in now, and how much will he be able to run, I guess, is the question. Because the lineup top to bottom in San Diego is just really, really good. And I'm not sure it's going to present many opportunities for him to steal bases, because they're not going to need to manufacture runs that way. So they're just really going to have no desire when you have Machado and Bogarts hitting behind you. Why would they run? Soto, I guess, is my question. So from that standpoint, I'm not projecting him for more than, you know, 5 to 7 stolen bases. I know he did 6 last year, so I'd say 5 to 7 is a comfortable range to go with him. And even if he hits 30 home runs and puts a 280 average, like, that's still a borderline top 10 overall dynasty asset. I know in OBP, yeah, he gets a little bit of a bump because he's going to post an OBP over 400. He has not had a season where he was below 400, which is just insane to see.
Right.
I'm curious if any other player in history has had their first 5 seasons with OBPs over 400 every year. I doubt it actually happened.
I'm gonna look at one player real quick. There's only one person that comes to mind, Ted Williams. Let me look.
Yeah, I mean, he probably did.
Ted Williams put an OBP over 400 for the first, 17 years of his career. That's insane.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm curious by that. Like, more modern day, like, who would it be? Ty Cobb has the most seasons with a 400 OBP or higher with 18, followed by Barry Bonds and Tris Speaker. Ted Williams had 15 seasons, Babe Ruth 15 seasons, Eddie Collins 15 seasons.
Over 400?
Over 400, yep. Oh, not in a row, but just over 400.
Because he has, according to the Baseball Reference, 18 seasons over 400 OBP. So that's weird. I don't know what's not on you. Ted Williams.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I'm on stat use because I just Googled it and that's what I clicked on.
Oh, gotcha.
So,
weird.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Here's the issue. It came up with more than 400 plate appearances. That's what it would be.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't see it. 52 and 53, he didn't really play at all. Okay, never mind. I wasn't looking over there. But still, regardless, you know, incredible feat by Soto for that.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, that was a tangent, but a fun tangent. I'm going to explore and see because I think it'd make for a good tweet if I can find it. Anyway, so with Soto, like I said, 30 home runs, 5 stolen bases, I think, is a reasonable expectation. He's going to score a lot of runs. I think that's a pretty much a guarantee in that lineup. RBIs, maybe more of a question. If he's hitting second behind Kim, and I know Tatis will come back and make that lineup much better. But for now, I don't know. I guess that's my questions of, you know, why did his average dip last year? Well, it was a little bit of BABIP fueled. I mean, a 249 BABIP is a large reason why that happened. But you look, and Soto puts the ball on the ground a lot. And last year was his career low line drive rate at 16.2%. So when you're not hitting the ball on a line consistently, you're hitting more pop-ups, hitting more balls on the ground, you're going to naturally run lower BABIPs. And that was the case with him last year. And this isn't to just say that, like, I'm completely out on, because we're still talking about a top 10, borderline top 10 dynasty asset in my rankings. But I'm just wondering, at what point do we finally say, like, all right, he's not a bona fide top five. He's 24 years old. He was 23 all last year. It's crazy to even act like that he's just going to fall off the face of the earth. That's not the case. But I just think there's other players that are, I mean, Jordan Alvarez with no speed provides more fantasy value than Soto, in my opinion. The difference is, look at the number of hits. I mean, Soto, 127 hits last year. The year before, when he hit 313, he had 157 hits. The issue is the walks, and you're just not going to get the fantasy production that you do because he walks so much. Now, going on Jordan, on the flip side, you look, and he has astronomically higher hit rate because he doesn't walk as much, and he still posts high OBPs and good walk rates. Like, he posted a 14% walk rate last year, but Soto just walks almost too much, which is weird to say, but for fantasy, yes, that does matter.
No, it absolutely does. I think there's that. You know, obviously, you know, in real life, you know, great, you know, get on base. But for fantasy, I think there is that fine line. And where that threshold is, I don't know. Is it, you know, over 15%, over 18%, over 20%? I don't know. I'd have to look into that more to see, like, where it really starts affecting players' value. But he's been over 20% each of the last 3 years. He's actually been very consistent, little over 20% walk rate. K rate's been right in that low to mid 14% range. I'm gonna give him this year. You know, like I said, with the new shift rules, that lineup behind him, I was just pulling up projections because obviously Steamer's been out for a bit. The Bat and Bat X came out today, which is a lot of fun. It's always fun when a new set of projections come out, and the projections, you know, they're pretty close. You know, the Bat X has him at 31 home runs, 102 runs. The Bat 28 and 10. Steamer 33 and 10. All the steals are. Excuse me, I was 33-9. All the steals are 8 or 9, average right on 280, runs 100 to 112 or so, 28 to 33 home runs. I just want to see what he can do this year with the shift ban. I think that'll help him. The lineup, he's played over 150 games back-to-back years. I just want to see what this year looks like. And if it's kind of similar to last year, then I think I might be in the same ballpark as you. I just want to see, because, you know, previous 2 years, hitting 351, obviously shortened season. And 313, you know, was one of the best, you know, short sample sizes we've ever seen out of him in 2020. So I think he can get that average back up. You know, I don't think he's, you know, gonna, I say he hits closer to 313 than 242 this year. I think 280, 290 range is fine. I think that could be 120 plus runs, maybe even higher. You know, if he's getting on base and getting those guys behind him when Tatis comes back. So I'm going to give him this year. I think there'll be a big bounce back, but. Yeah, he's definitely one that's he's always been hard to rank. He definitely has, because of that high walk rate, limiting him a little bit, taking away some of the damage he could potentially do. But that, I definitely agree on you there. But I'm probably a year behind you on this, but we'll see if that happens for me next year. But Jordan has a case for just being the best hitter in the game in general. I think that that's a very strong case for that. And can we stop with ranking Vlad over Jordan in any freaking format? It's still happening this year. Something fell off my desk there as I'm so upset. I'm not
angry.
I know. I'm knocking. What even was that? Oh, a picture. There we go. It's not broken. Don't worry. But Jordan is better than Vlad. You know, he's like, oh, look at what, you know, yeah, Vlad has the best individual season, but that was boosted by Dunedin and the Buffalo. But we're not going into that again. Look at what Vlad does. I mean, Jordan does. And that's not a knock against Vlad. Vlad's a very good hitter, you know, elite hitter. But Jordan is just one of the, again, could be the best pure hitter in the game. We look at, you know, blend of contact and approach and power. He is elite, and, you know, he could easily do, you know, Judge to this year. I could see Jordan hitting 50, 55 home runs. Everything is just so elite with him. XBA was 329 last year. XLEG was 672. Those are even above his surface stats. The approach has improved last year as well. Like, everything is there. So, you know, he's right in that cluster where these guys are all back to back. So it's basically a coin flip, but yeah, he is absolutely top 10. And then I want to see too, speaking of, you know, Houston Astros here, Kyle Tucker, you know, in, you know, having the, speaking of the shift ban here as well, he was a guy that you look at his shift metrics here as I pull them back up. So he was shifted against 91% of the time last year. WOBA against the shift, 336, no shift, 463. And this is still a guy that went 30-25 last year. And, you know, obviously I'm not saying he's going to hit goal, you know, 40-35, but you could easily see, you know, another 30-25 year, but get that average back up a good 20 points or so, which will lead to, you know, more RBI, more runs, more than likely get the OBP up a little bit as well. So he's a guy that I think he could be a top five mainstay for a while. And, you know, what's it going to take, do you think, for Tucker to cement himself and get up right up as where we're talking to Bunya? I think long term, I wonder if there's not that big of a gap between the two.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I think especially with the shift being banned, it will make a difference. Now, Tucker's an odd one because he's not the fastest runner either. His sprint speed last year was very poor, but he still manages to be efficient on the base paths, which he makes it work. But on the other hand, Acuña is still has the speed. I mean, he came back from, you know, the ACL injury last year and still had high end sprint speed. So I think, you know, what he is capable of from a stolen base standpoint is just much higher than what we can see from Tucker. I think 40 stolen bases would not surprise me at all out of Acuña. And Tucker, I think I feel comfortable saying 20, but we saw 25 last year. So why not 25 again, I guess. And the average should bump up. They may have similar averages. Acuña definitely has the upside over him, but you're right. Like, there's probably going to be seasons where we see Tucker provide similar value when they're both healthy and have full seasons. So I'm right there with you. I have Tucker, you know, in the sixth spot, I think, overall for my rankings. Yep, sixth overall. So to me, like, that's a tier at this point. Like, I'm not sure, because my overall is Acuña, Julio, Rodriguez, Yordan, Tatis, Otani, Tucker, and then Bobby Witt comes in next. I don't have a problem saying that first tier runs through Kyle Tucker. Then you can start tier two with Bobby Witt Jr., but there's a chance, obviously, Bobby Witt Jr. could bump up into that next grouping.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you on that. You know, we differ a little bit on the order, but my top seven right now is J-Rod, Acuña, Otani, Soto, Tatis, Tucker, Yordan. So I think then it's, you know, Trey and Bobby Witt and Joe Ram and Judge. But I think that's, you know, if you wanted to put, like I said, Yordan 2, like, great. If you want to put Tatis still at 2, great. Like, I don't have any issue with that. And the fact that we still have Tatis top 5 and, you know, we still have Harper top 10 here, I think that shows that we're not really, you know, I think we both bumped them down a little bit due to everything, all the injuries with Tatis and all the other crap that's gone along with him in the last couple of years. You know, obviously the Harper injury this year unfortunately bumps him down a few spots, but I'm not worried about Harper. I'm definitely worried about Harper. I think he'll be fine. He's a gamer. Hopefully this is, you know, finally cleans everything up and he's, you know, clean bill health moving forward, and he's a few more years of being an elite stud, you know, into his early 30s. Tatis, you know, I am worried about, obviously, to a degree. Like, if you're not worried about Tatis at all, then I don't know, you don't have a soul, you don't have feelings or something, because there's definitely some concern here. But at the same time, I keep going back to that 42-25 year, just 130 games, and he's probably the only guy in baseball that could go 50-30 or even 50-35. Like, that, I obviously love Acuña, love J-Rod and all of them. I don't think either of them could go to that level. I think if, like, everything breaks right for every player, the highest pure upside is Tatis, and he's shown that. So I'm still very fine having him in my top 5 here and overall, and I almost put him ahead of Tucker. Like, I was flip-flopping him and Tucker, but yeah, he definitely should be top 5 still, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it just shows you what kind of player he is, that he can stay in the top 5 despite everything going on. It's funny, right, when you click on his FanGraphs page and the news, like the RotoWire news, it says Tatis, and then in parentheses, shoulder, wrist, suspension, was cleared to begin baseball activities. That was on the last week, on the 6th. So it's crazy. I mean, just look at the projections that have come out on him. The Bat X has him, and this is over 125 games, because he does have to serve the suspension, 36 home runs and 22 stolen bases, 92 runs, 90 RBI. So that's just nuts to think about what he can do over a full season. And the most games we've seen him play was in 2021, and that was 130, and he went 42-25. So it's crazy, but 50-30 is a realistic possibility. Like, I don't see any other player that, I think 40-40 is possible for Acuna, but no player in baseball can do 50-30 except Fernando Tatis Jr. Now, how will he come back from these injuries and even the suspension? It's still to be seen, but the talent level is there and there's no denying what he's capable of. So it still warrants this spot in the rankings.
Oh, for sure. I could. There was no doubt in my mind. Like, I've seen other people drop it or not, and I get it. You know, if you're more worried about, you know, everything going on with him, okay, I can see it. But yeah, I just couldn't, looking at the talent, it's hard. If this goes on for another year or two, all right, I'll probably drop him lower then. But let's see what he does this year before we make any big drastic movements down. All right, let's hop into the next set of 10 rankings here. This will be 11 through 20. For me, that's Corbin Carroll, who I almost put ahead of Mike Trout. That was back and forth on that. I have Michael Harris, 12. Robert, Eloy Jimenez, and Randy Arozarena, 13, 14, and 15. 16 through 20, Jordan Walker, Dalton Varsho, Cedric Mullins, Andrew Vaughn, and T. Oscar Hernandez. Who you got, Chris?
All right, so at 11 is Michael Harris, the second, which is weird that he's ahead of Mike Trout, but he is. Mike Trout at 12, Luis Robert at 13, Randy Arozarena, Jordan Walker at 15, and then 16 through 20 is Eloy Jimenez, Cedric Mullins, Jackson Churio, Adelis Garcia, and then Dalton Varsho rounds it out.
This was a really interesting range for me. There's a lot of guys in here that are hard for me to rank. Like Dalton Varsho, you know, do I value him? I'm trying to think, like, will I still value him here if he loses catcher eligibility? Maybe he'd move down a few more spots, but I don't think it'd be a drastic drop off. But he's still a, you know, potential 25-15 outfielder. So I think he should stay in this range for sure. The one that I wanted to bump down more, and I think I moved him down ultimately a couple of spots here. I think he was right behind Arozarena, and I moved him down to 18 with Cedric Mullins. You know, he doesn't hit lefties overly well. He started to lose some at bats against lefties late in the year. And obviously, you know, the numbers were still good. They weren't 2021 good, obviously, but, you know, he still had a pretty good power speed year. I just wonder if that's why, you know, I'm starting to do a dynasty buy, sell, hold series over on my Patreon, going team by team. And I started with Baltimore, and he was the sell here. And I'd said, like, oh, you know, I don't think he's going to fall off a cliff anytime soon, but I see if his value is going to go one way or the other, I see it going down as opposed to up. So, I don't know. Mullins is one where I might be looking to sell him right now. If you can get close to top 50 value in a one-for-one swap, but on maybe a different position that you need, that'd be something I'd probably entertain right now.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm certainly not opposed to that. And we knew that the 30-30 season was not repeatable. And if you were disappointed by what he did last year, then I don't really know what to tell you, because that was more of the expectation that
right. He
would be like a 15-30 type. And he did exactly that. He's 16 home runs, 34 stolen bases. The average did take a hit to 258. Again, that was more what we expected. So with Mullins, I am a bit concerned about the platoon risk as Baltimore continues to have these prospects keep coming up in the system. What's going to happen here? I mean, Mullins isn't a good hitter against lefties, and we saw down the stretch, like, he really began to lose playing time against them. So while he would still be on the strong side of a platoon, the playing inconsistently has me a bit worried. So I would look to cash out on if you could, because I think that there is still value to be had with this, with a 28-year-old. You can get a decent return from him, and knowing that he's probably never going to go 30-30 again, or probably even close to it. And I think there's still some value to be had there just because people remember that. And it's not that far out. I mean, you look and Mullins just does a lot of damage to the poolside. That's really it. The numbers just aren't encouraging at all. I mean, his average exit velocity is below average. Max EV is below average. Everything's kind of below average. And last year, he began to hit more fly balls, which really wasn't a good thing in his case. It was honestly more the pop-ups. I mean, his pop-up rate was 11.5%. So that increased. The line drive rate went down with him. So overall, I mean, the profile's fine, but I think I would cash out if I could in a dynasty league. And, you know, you can probably still get a pretty good player from that.
Yep, I'm there with you. Luis Robert, Chris. Is this his make or break year for you? Because obviously, I've always loved Luis Robert, you know, and look at the talent. He has first round fantasy talent. But look at the last few years. Oh, he played 56 out of 60 games in 2020, oddly enough. But in 2021, 68 games. And then 2022, 98 games. He's only combined for 697 plate appearances over the last 2 years. Yeah, he's hit for a solid average, 38 and then 284. 12 home runs, 11 steals last year. I think that was right around like a 20, you know, 24, 22 pace, something like that. But the walk rate remains low. He just can't stay on the field. Like, how long we both have him. Where'd we have him? I had him 13. Oh, we both had him 13 overall. Like, how long do we keep him here, Chris? I'm starting to, as much as I like the guy, I'm like, dude, you got to show me something soon or you're going to drop, you know, a much lower in my rankings.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that health's obviously a big factor there. Like, you just got to be on the field, and he hasn't shown the ability to do that. Also, I find it's interesting that his Savant page now says Luis Robert Jr. Is he going to start going by that? Is that going to be on his jersey?
I did see that too, yeah.
Yeah, that's the first I've seen that. But, well, one of the issues with Luis Robert is that he chases way too many pitches. The skills are there, the tools, the power, speed, everything you want to see is there. But health's an issue, and the swing and miss is an issue for him. I do think that it's a huge year for him, and we need to see something out of him to really just keep this ranking, because he could fall off pretty hard and go to like a back end top 100 dynasty asset. I'm holding for now, but I do think that the drop off could be pretty quick.
Yeah, I think this would be a year one way or the other for Luis Robert. He's either going to, all right, finally tap in that potential, put it all together and put together like a, maybe like a Kyle Tucker year from this year, 30-25 type of year, or he's going to have another year where it's like, all right, flashes of brilliance. Maybe he has a good, full season pace, but he's only playing 90 games, 100 games, whatever it may be. And if he has another one of these, let's say he repeats 2022 or something in that ballpark, yeah, he's going to drop down, a good, probably out of my top 50. There's a lot of wide range of outcomes here for Luis Robert this year. But I'm hoping, I have him on several teams, so I'm hoping that it's the good Robert and not the falling down the rankings Robert, but we shall see. All right, that's going to take us to a quick break here to get a word from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Asbury Methodist Village in Montgomery County takes senior living to the next level, creating extraordinary opportunities for a fulfilling future. Work your brain and body in our new wellness center. Stroll our expansive campus and 17-acre nature preserve. Stay sharp with our resident-run college and find so many new ways to get involved and make a difference for others. Anticipate more from your retirement. Visit AsburyMethodistVillage.org today. Your future's here. Equal opportunity housing provider.
All right, welcome back from the break. Let's keep going in our rankings here, but to recap real quick, top 20 for me was J-Rod, Acuna, Soto, Tucker, Tatis, Alvarez, Judge, Betts, Harper, Trout at 10, Carroll, Harris, Robert, Jimenez, Arozarena, Walker, Varsho, Mullins, Vaughn, and Teoscar Hernandez at 20. For Chris, Acuna, J-Rod, Alvarez, Tatis, Tucker, Judge, Betts, Soto, Harper, Carroll at 10. Harris, Trout, Robert, Arozarena, Walker, Jimenez, Mullins, Churio, Garcia, Adelis, and Dalton Varsho at 20. Let's go 21 through 30. Chris, who you got?
All right. So 21 starts with Andrew Vaughn. You just mentioned Teoscar Hernandez, Brian Reynolds, James Wood, and Riley Green, 25 spot. And 26 through 30 is George Springer, Kyle Schwarber, Drew Jones, Tyler O'Neill, and Byron Buxton.
Oh, good old Byron Buxton, man. Another one that I don't know where I want to rank him. Is obviously there's still a lot of good there, but even more bad. So I have him a few spots higher, but I think this is a fair range for him. I think it's just outside my top 100, around 110 overall. But he's another one that could, jump up 50 spots, move down 50 spots. Another big wide range of outcomes with him. My 21 through 30. I have Adelis Garcia, Riley Green, Brian Reynolds, Jackson Chourio, George Springer, another one that's kind of hard to rank, but wish you would stay healthy. Byron Buxton, Kyle Schwarber, Tyler O'Neill, Taylor Ward, and big old James Wood there at 30. With, you know, the one I'm really interested in this year, we both have him at 23, Brian Reynolds. It's no, you know, secret that he's going to leave Pittsburgh sooner rather than later, whether it's this week, next month, you know, in March, in July, at the deadline. I don't know. But he's not going to be in Pittsburgh long term, and we could speculate, you know, all day and night where he's going to be. But I think regardless of where he goes, it almost feels like a positive wherever he goes, doesn't it? Like, obviously, the Pittsburgh lineup isn't that great, you know, especially if he goes to, like, he's probably going to go to a contender, right? Because I don't see, like, a bottom-dwelling team trading for a Brian Reynolds. It's probably going to be, like, all right, a Yankees or a Dodgers or, you know, a team of that elk, a team that's, you know, going to be a postseason contending team on paper, so.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
You got to figure wherever he goes, he's going to be a net positive. And he goes to Yankee Stadium. We see that power get up over 30 home runs with that short porch in right field. I would love that for Brian Reynolds. So he's definitely a buy right now. And I think he's just always going to be underrated. But that might come to an end if he gets out of Pittsburgh and gets into a bigger market.
Yeah, imagine him in a Yankees uniform. That tax would be pretty high on him.
It would probably jump too high for my liking there. But this shows you, like, I think he's a very good hitter that gets underrated because he's in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, and it's certainly an issue playing there and in that lineup. It's just far from ideal. And, you know, Reynolds had a crappy 2020, but he's kind of proved at this point that that's just not who he is. Like, we knew that. I mean, it was an insane buy-low opportunity after that season. You know, he was sub 200, 7 home runs and 208 plate appearances. But that was after a rookie season where he hit 314 with a 377 OBP. Despite that bad 2020, still a 281 career hitter, which is, you know, fantastic to see. So I think that you move out of Pittsburgh, you get in a good lineup, and the numbers could really take off. I still think that he's got 30 home run potential, and he's going to be a positive in speed, maybe 5 to 10, and that's going to play. I mean, we can, you know, take that and run with it all day long. The sprint speed's still good. The contact skills are really good. The chase rate was interesting last year. It did kind of take a step forward in a bad way. I mean, he chased a near 36% rate, which was a career high, by a decent margin. And you have to wonder if he was pressing, just trying to do too much because he had nobody else around him. In the process, though, his zone contact rate was a career high. So those things are encouraging. Really good line drive hitter. Healthy amount of fly balls that lead to home run. I mean, his home run to fly ball rate has been really good throughout his career. So in Yankee Stadium, God, it'd be amazing. But, you know, I think anywhere he moves is probably a net positive. So I'm looking forward to it happening. But regardless, I think Brian Reynolds is still a bit undervalued in dynasty leagues and should be, you should go out and get him if you can, because there's a lot of value to be had.
So I'm looking, I just pulled up his spray chart at Yankee Stadium. There's at bare minimum, three more would have gotten out. There was two doubles and one mark as an error that would have gotten out. There's just a bunch right on the wall. So let's just say there's probably right on the wall one, two, five or six. Let's say another two or three. You're talking another five, six home runs at least at Yankee Stadium. There's a lot more that were just right there at that wall. Yeah. So that could, that wind tunnel out in the right center, you could get a few of those that kind of fell short on the map here. Could have carried a little bit further because, you know, kind of that wind tunnel, that effect they have there in right center. So yeah, I think Brian Reynolds goes to Yankee Stadium. He's probably low 30s home runs, and obviously much better lineup. Counting stats will be there. he would jump into probably a top 50 player on ADP. And
oh, yeah,
I can totally see that. I can't wait to see where he goes. I'm kind of hoping that happens sooner rather than later. But on the flip side here, a player that's probably the polar opposite of Brian Reynolds here is Byron Buxton. And again, I think people just assume whenever I tweet about Byron Buxton, usually it's more so me telling people to sell and pointing out the flaws here. And people in the replies, it feels like people just think it's, oh, he's going to stay healthy. Yeah, that's one part of it. But it's not like there's not an issue here with the bat. Yeah, the sprint speed, phenomenal. He's one of the fastest players in the league. He's got huge raw power. And he hit 28 home runs last year in 382 plate appearances. But is everybody just going to ignore that he's a 244 career hitter with a 301 OBP? Is that just going to get glossed over? That hit 224 maybe last year? Like,
maybe so.
Can we talk about that for sure? Like, I don't know why people are just, oh yeah, he's going to stay healthy. No, there's other issues here besides that. Outside of, you know, 1 year he hit 306, his next career high is 262. There's a bunch under 250. There's a year he hit 156. Yeah, in 28 games. But it's not just the health. It's the batting average. It's the K rate. It's the fact that even though he has all this speed, he only had 6 steals last year, and he hasn't really, you know, shown, you know, he's a 6-9-2. So the last 3 years in 192 games, he has 17. So he's not running a whole ton here. He doesn't get caught a lot. He's a very efficient base stealer, but the floor is just so low with him that even if you're getting the plate appearances, which you're not, like, he hit 224 last year. It's almost like empty power at certain times. And then we see what can go right with a 306, 358, 647 slash line in 61 games here before that. So I just can't do it anymore with him. And I don't even know if I like my ranking of him now at 26 at this position. I think I should bump him even lower, and maybe I'll eat my words and he'll finally put together that 1 year and jump way back up rankings. But I just can't do it. I have zero shares of him, and I don't envision myself having any shares anytime soon.
Nope. There's a lot of flaws. You've mentioned a lot of them. I mean, the contact rate was 68.8% last year. That's not good. The chase rate was north of 30%. His home run and fly ball is consistently good, but also he hit 51% of the balls in the air last year. That's just not healthy for batting average at all, especially when you're looking and saying 12% of them are pop-ups. That's just, you're going to get so many outs because of that. And, it, you know, 18% line drive rate is not good. There's just, I don't know. I mean, we're talking about now a 29-year-old who has shown flashes of putting it together, but I'm not sure we're ever going to see the season that we think that we can get out of Byron Buxton. And I just can't do it. I just can't get myself to invest in him in a dynasty league, or really anything, for any league for that matter, because there's way too many red flags for me outside of just the injuries. And we've hit on those. He could fall out of the top 150 in dynasty before long, I think.
Yeah, he's already outside my top 100, and yeah, that could easily happen. Just look at, you know, the breakdown of pitch types here. It's just so all over the place. Just look at fastballs. Starting in 2017, going up through last year, I'll read his batting average on fastballs, or against fastballs. 271, 150, 279, 188, 333, 225. It's just so up and down. Same with breaking balls, you know, 220 or 192, 226, 356, 303, 258. It's so, nothing about his profile anywhere is consistent. I guess the one thing is the hard hit rate and the barrel rate. Those have been consistent over the last couple of years. But outside of that, yeah, he can hit the ball really hard. But like you mentioned, he almost kind of sold out for power last year. The expense of the batting average doesn't really run a whole ton anymore. K rate went up to 30.4% last year. I'm just out. There's always going to be many people that like him more than me, and I just can't stomach the price. I never have, and it's getting worse and worse. And he's 29. You know, he's got to get into his 30s soon, and, you know, these players don't magically start getting healthier and more durable in their 30s. Usually the opposite, and he've already had this many issues with durability in his 20s. What are the 30s going to hold? I don't want to see. You know, I don't want him on my team to find out, and luckily I don't have any shares, so I'm happy keeping him that way for sure. the other one here, you know, I had him at 21, you had him at 19, but I feel like he deserves a little bit of discussion here. It's Adelis Garcia. Yeah, he's like the profile when he broke out in 2021. I think the general consensus was like, all right, that was cool. That was fun. But let's see what he does the following year. And then he had another great power speed year, 27-25 last year after going 31-16 year before that. And you could argue that last year was even better than this year, or at least the same. Yeah, slightly different power speed, you know, breakdown, but another great year of two straight years above 25 home runs and above 15 steals, added in 88 runs, 101 RBI, 250, 300, 456 line. Obviously, the approach is still an issue. Did trim the K rate a little bit, improve the walk rate a little bit. Both are still bad. You know, he still chases way too much. He still whiffs way too much. But at what point, like, all right, maybe he can maintain. I don't know. It's I'm still kind of, even after the last 2 years, Chris, I'm still like, all right, you know, he's fun, but when is the floor going to fall out here?
Yeah, I think that's the question. I think that's what we're kind of waiting on. Now, the power is pretty evident that I think it's here to stay, and the sprint speed's good too. He gets the ball extremely hard, and honestly, like, it's his profile's not that dissimilar from Luis Robert, which I find interesting from that kind of standpoint. I mean, Robert does make better contact. That's really the only thing, but they both chase a lot, and they both have, you know, good power and speed. Like I said, the only thing Robert really has going for him is the fact that his zone contact rate was, you know, about 10% higher. Otherwise, that's the only thing keeping Robert ahead of him right now. But from Adelis's standpoint, the fall off could be pretty significant. He's almost a case where he doesn't walk enough. And, you know, last year it was 6.1%, which was a career high. I know it's only been his second full season, but he went from 5.1 to 6.1%. Still not ideal. He ran a 300 OBP and he ran a sub 300 OBP in 2021. And while the power speed is enticing, this is a profile that could fall off really quick if the Ks are still high. He continues to chase bad pitches. I'm afraid of that. So I may be looking to sell him in a dynasty league because he can't hit breaking balls. I mean, last year his batting average was below 200 against breaking balls. The XBA was not encouraging at 208 either. 41% whiff rate against those pitches. That's not what you want to see. So when you're just that bad against them, there's some red flags. I'm looking to cash out if you can. I think that Adelis can still provide value, but I'm not sure he's going to do it at that level again. Like 25-25 was a huge season for him. I'm not sure we see that. And I'm just willing to, I want to get out from under him. He's going to be 30 before the season starts. Now, that's not always the worst thing in the world, but the hit tool just has its concerns for me, and the chance of him becoming Javi Baez could happen really quick.
Yeah, I do. I was literally just about to say that. I'm like, is he just outfield Javi Baez at this point? And it's funny that he's already like pushing 30 because he just broke in last year. He was one of the older guys breaking at 27, but that's going against him too. Because like if he was 24 or 25, all right, I'd be more willing to probably even rank him a bit higher. And I still have him top 100. I think he warrants that right now. I think we both have him top 100. But yeah, this is one where I think there's a better chance of, you know, like I'd say if there's a better chance of him going up or down 40 spots, it's probably going to be down 40 spots at this point. But yeah, I think the power's there. It's probably going to be always a pretty good power speed limit for the next few years. But is that 250 that we saw this past year, is that like the high mark in the 300 OBP? Is he, you know, he probably has a better chance of hitting 200 than 260 at this point. So I don't know. I like him. I think it'll be fine. I think he put together another pretty good power speed year. But yeah, I think with him getting already up into his 30s pretty soon here, all the issues with the approach here, like he's going to be a fun player, but he's going to be a maddening player to roster month to month, week to week even. So yeah, if you can get someone to pay borderline top 50 value or top 60, top 70 value, like a one-for-one swap or something like that, I'd definitely look into that as well. What a fun player in this range. We both have Riley Green in this range too. Where are you at on Riley Green? You know, and not just with the ballpark. Obviously, that doesn't help, but at the same time, they are moving in the fence a little bit, but I also saw that only 11 or 12 deep fly balls there would have gotten out with these new dimensions. So I don't know how much it's going to help. Maybe minimal, but I don't think it's going to be huge. But just in general, Chris, like, are you still, thinking Riley Green? Like, is there a path for him getting to, let's say, top 15 at this position? Do you think that's there? I don't know if it is. I think right now, I don't know if I like my ranking at 22. I feel like this is who he could be at 22, and I'm pretty much giving him that ranking before even seeing him do it. So I think I might move him down a little bit. I still like him, but I don't know. I think he's just going to be one of those guys where he's going to be, you know, a little lesser version of Reynolds, who I only have, well, I actually have below him. So I need to change right now.
Yeah, I'm Reynolds over Green. I do think the ballpark could help a bit, but there is a big issue in Riley Green's game, and it's ground balls.
Yeah.
It's always been an issue throughout his career. And last year specifically, I mean, we saw it at 55.3% in AAA, and it was 56% in the majors. Now, it was sub 50% in 2021, which you'd definitely like to see, but it's just been increased as he's moved up levels. And it's almost like pitchers have found a way to pitch him to induce the ground balls. He makes good zone contact, and the contact rate is about league average, but the ground balls just are going to be the issue unless he can fix that a bit. You know, he's not going to get to home runs when he's hitting, you know, 23% of balls in the air. Like, you go from Byron Buxton at 51% to Riley Green at 23%. Just not going to cut it there. And you know, we did see the strikeouts. That was a concern too, because we did see those in the minors. And, you know, even dating back to his debut, I mean, the strikeout numbers were pretty high, and the lowest rate we ever saw was in low A in 2019, but that was just over 108 plate appearance sample with 24% K rate. Anytime that he's been, you know, above 150 plate appearances, he's had a strikeout rate north of 27.3%. So those are a bit concerning to me, the strikeouts and ground balls. Now, the upside's still there. He's young. He can certainly make adjustments. And it is worth noting that, I mean, he played last year as a 21-year-old in the majors, which that speaks a lot of volume. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure how much speed that we get from him. I don't think he steals a lot of bases. And the power, like, what does he get to? I mean, I think Reynolds is a fair comp, but a worse batting average out of Green. I don't see Green hitting anywhere close to the batting average that we could get out of Reynolds. So that in itself leads me to believe that should adjust my rankings even a little bit more, even though I had Reynolds higher.
Yeah, I'm starting to think there should be a bigger gap there. So, yeah, so I like Green. I think he's going to be, you know, a pretty solid hitter for a long time. I just don't see him really standing out. Like I said, I could see low 20s home runs if he starts hitting more fly balls. I could see, you know, a little bit of speed, but nothing impactful, and good but not great average. So, yeah, I think he's going to be, you know, a guy that could probably flirt with top 75, back in top 100 status every year, but I don't see him ever getting top 50. I just really don't see that path. I think he'd have to have a lot of things break right out, change a lot of things, run more, et cetera, et cetera. And I just don't see all those things happening, maybe one or two of them, but yeah, again, so I think Riley Green is a sell high as well, if you can do so right now. All right, let's keep it going here. Next 10 in our rankings. Actually, let's just finish out our top 50s here. So we'll go 31 through 50. For me, I go Seiya Suzuki, Nick Castellanos, Jake McCarthy, Colton Cowser, Drew Jones, Stephen Kwan, who's a hard one to rank. I moved him up and down, but right now he's at 36. Christian Yelich, Pete Crow Armstrong, Ian Happ, Chris Bryant, who, again, another guy I have zero shares of. He just can't stay healthy. Starling Marte, Giancarlo Stanton, Alex Kirilloff, MJ Melendez, who has outfield eligibility for now. Elijah Green, Evan Carter, Jason Dominguez, nice little trio of prospects there. Lars Nootbaar, Zach Veen, Gavin Lux, and Cody Bellinger. Actually, that's 51, but whatever. Cody Bellinger there.
You wanted Bellinger.
I just wanted to say Bellinger. So, which is, he's right around 200 overall for me, just to give a rough range.
All right. So at 31 for me is Taylor Ward, followed by Seiya Suzuki. I like both those a lot as buys right now. Honestly.
Oh, 100%. I was going to mention Taylor Ward specifically.
Yeah, both those are big time buys for me. But let me keep going with Colton Cowser at 33, Christian Yelich at 34, Nick Castellanos at 35. 36 through 40 is Jake McCarthy, Chris Bryant, Ian Happ, Evan Carter, and MJ Melendez. 41 through 45 is Lars Nootbaar, Elijah Green, Giancarlo Stanton, Starling Marte, Harrison Bader. And then rounding out from 46 through 50 is Mitch Haniger, Jason Dominguez, Stephen Kwan, Keith Crow Armstrong, and Brandon Nimmo. And I've got Cody Bellinger at 52 for what it's worth, just to throw his name in too.
So both kind of the same range there. So I'm going to take a stab at it and say that to all the listeners listening, they're probably the first thought after hearing us say those 20 names each are, what the heck is Starling Marte doing that low? He is one that we actually discussed before we started recording when we were kind of fine-tuning our rankings, putting them on the sheet and looking, doing our last little our checks here to see if we liked our rankings. And we always change stuff. This is how we are. But we have him 44 for you and 41 for me. And I think that puts him like 150 to 160 range roughly in our overall rankings. We were looking like, all right, like you mentioned, Chris, the sprint speed is declining, and when that goes, like, what is Marte? He's 34 now, so I just see this free fall continuing, kind of like what Whit Merrifield has been going through. So yeah, you know, he still could be solid this year if you're for redraft purposes, back at top 100 guy there, but the arrow is definitely trending down here for Marte.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think the fall off could happen pretty quickly, and this is kind of why I've dropped him so much, because of what we saw with Whit Merrifield last year. Both similar ages. Marte's 34. I'm not sure when he'll turn 35. I want to double check that. But regardless, like, the falling off can happen quick with this kind of profile of player. I mean, Marte just turned 34 in October for this world, so he'll play the whole year as a 34-year-old. But I don't know. I just the Whit Merrifield thing scares the heck out of me. And from there, like, I'm trading him in a dynasty league if I can. The sprint speed has fallen off a bit with Marte, and it could go even less this year. Not even to mention the fact that he's hurt all the time. I know he's still eclipsed 500 plate appearances the last 2 years, but there's just a lot of these little injuries here and there. And I do think that may hurt his ability to steal bases, even get to power. So, you know, to me, Marte, I don't know if he gets to 30 steals again. I'm profiling him for this season as more of a 15 home run, 20 steal type. And the average, who knows? I mean, yeah, he's a career 290 hitter, but the fall off happens quick. Like, the aging curve when we get to 34 for a player of this profile, it just doesn't age well. And that's my concern. So I'm selling him off if I can.
Yeah, so am I. You know, he's hasn't played more than 120 games in each of the last two seasons. 120 in 2021, 118 last year. And he only played 132 in 2019, 145 in 2018. He hasn't even gotten to 140 since 2018. And yeah, he's not like he's playing 80 and 90 like Robert and Buxton, but you've seen that sprint speed took a big nosedive. Yeah, he had 47 steals in 2021. Great. That was wonderful. And he was very impactful and probably won people some money that year. But the sprint speed has been in constant decline the last few years. You look at, you know, percentiles, 92, 89, 83, 68. Look at sprint speed right here in feet per second. Was at 29 feet per second in 2019, and then 28.5, 28.4, and 28 last year. So that's probably going to keep ticking down here. And so I won't be surprised if he didn't even make it to 20 and he played another 120 games. So I'm missing some time. Declining production. Like I said, he'll still be good. He'll still be solid enough. But yeah, in Dynasty is one I'm trying to. I'm trying to think if I have any shares of him. If I do, it's only one. So, but I'll have to look. And if I do, I'm going to try to, you know, sell him right away. Cause yeah, that decline has already started happening. Hard hit rates, barrel rates have never been great. They even ticked down a bit last year across the board. You know, K rates going. Well, it's still fine, but walk rate went back down to 5% after going up to 8% the previous year. It's just not a lot to like, at least long-term, you know, projection-wise. So, yeah, definitely looking to sell him right now. But yeah, back to what we were kind of talking about at the beginning of this, though, one that I'm especially buying is Taylor Ward, who obviously came out like a man on fire beginning of last year. And everybody like, oh, what's this Taylor Ward guy doing here? And then he fell off. There was, you know, I forget if it was injury I think it was a wrist injury middle of the year or a hand. I can't remember what it was. But then after he kind of got, you know, came back and got healthy again, he ended the season very, very hot. So like I said, from 824 to the end of the season, which was 146 plate appearances, 353, 397, 579 with seven home runs, two steals, and only a 15.8% walk rate and a 226 ISO. I'm really buying him right now because I think he's legit. Is he as legit as he was beginning of the year? No. But is this a guy that can hit, you know, 280 or so with 25 plus home runs, a little bit of speed and solid counting stats? Absolutely. I don't see any reason why he can't, looking at his metrics.
Yeah, I mean, he even finished the season as a 281 hitter. So that, look, I broke his season up into three parts, basically. So the beginning of the season through May 20th was 131 plate appearances. The unrealistic numbers, like you said, it was 370, 481, 713 slug, nine home runs. He had a 17.5% walk rate and a 19.8% K. So on May 20th, he left the game with a shoulder and neck injury. From there, he came back on 526 and struggled. I mean, he was not ideal. He missed some time here and there, but he was clearly injured through the end of July. I think he was still working through it because he hit 217, 296, 314, just four home runs. But then, as you mentioned, he got healthy. He may be back fully over the final 2 months of the season. From August 1st on, he was 288, 346, 481 with 10 home runs. Now, that slash feels pretty appropriate. So you kind of extrapolate that out, and you have a 25 home run hitter and with a solid average, with some speed, as you mentioned, in a good lineup. Like, I really like Taylor Ward a lot. So I'm all in.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a, you know, back end top 100 guy moving forward, maybe even a little higher than that. I could see him, you know, in my overall. Let's see where he's at in my overall. He is, yeah, he's at 106 right now in my overall. I think he could even tick up into that back end top 100 and maybe even, you know, like, I'm wondering, why do I have Riley Green ranked ahead of Taylor Ward? I mean, obviously, yeah, there's a little bit of an age gap there by about, see, Green's 22. Ward is 20. Okay, so this is, you know, nearly a 7 year age gap, so that definitely factors in, but that shouldn't be a huge gap, I don't think. So I think I need to move Ward even up a little bit, move Green down a little bit. They probably should be a bit closer here than they are in my overall. All right, Chris, let's round up the show here. Who's one guy in this 31 to 50 range that we just kind of rattled off? Is there one guy that stands out to you as having a higher chance than the others to break into, like, let's say the top 20 or even top 15 at this position next year?
I mean, everyone will say Lars Nubar, but listen, this is the Lars Nubar hype is going.
Yeah, it's pretty
wild.
Crazy. I like Nubar. Yeah, I think he's a good little player and in a favorable spot. But yeah, people that are going like bonkers over him, like, he's not that type of player. Let's calm down a little bit.
I agree. You know, I'm going to go out on a limb with I'd say fairly risky pick and say Jake McCarthy.
Oh, you stole, dude. That's what I was going to take too.
Well, it's probably just the clear one, I guess, of this grouping, unless we expect a prospect to debut and really bump up, because McCarthy, just if he plays every day, which I think it's a real possibility. I seem to think that he's going to be just an everyday guy. I think there's a legit shot that he's 15-30, 15 home runs, 30 stolen bases with a respectable average. And to me, like, that's going to lend itself to pushing up in that range of outfielders. Now, I'll let you hit on him a little more, but I also like C.S. Suzuki a lot and think that he could take that next step. He doesn't have the power speed intrigue, but he has the power and he still has a little bit of speed to offer. And he makes really good zone contact. He hits the ball really hard. I think Suzuki's going to be a big breakout this year in his second year in the States as someone who just turned 28. I'm excited to see what he can do as well. So both of those are ones that I think could really take big steps forward. So yeah, McCarthy, I'll let you hit on him a little more if you want, but I really like those.
Yeah, no, that's where I was going to go to. And you look at McCarthy's, you know, Statcast page, outside of sprint speed, there's actually a lot of blue on that Savant page, but those aren't everything. And especially with a guy like McCarthy that provides so much value with his legs. He had 23 steals in just 354 play appearances last year. I think he could be kind of like what we've seen from Whit Merrifield, you know, over the, you know, a few years ago, but that kind of several year stretch where Merrifield was like, all right, no, not a lot of power, but 10 to 15 home runs, good average. McCarthy's always hit for a good average in the minor leagues, and he hit 283 last year. I think 270, 280 is definitely reasonable, and 10 to 15 home runs, maybe, you know, 16, 17 some years. He showed a little more pop in the minors than what he showed now. And add in, this is a legit 30-plus steal guy. Like you mentioned, Chris, if he gets that playing time, and even if he's not like 100% full-time, but he's still getting like 550, 575 plate appearances, that could be 40 steals. Like, he's got that type of game-changing speed where he doesn't need to be stout with the bat to provide value. If he can just, like I said, hit 270 with 12 home runs, go along with like 35 steals, and I'm assuming, I want to see where, I know roster resource isn't everything, but I want to see where, you know, that site projects him in the lineup. Let's see. They have him. Oh, here comes an ad. Hold on. X out of that. And now it's 11. There we go. So they have him third. Okay. I don't like that at all. But like, Steamer has him at 15 home runs, 27 steals. I'd take the over on, with 595 plate appearances, I would take the over on that stolen base total. 15 is kind of fair. 258 average. I'll take the over on that too. I think he's hitting probably more towards the top of the order and moving, you know, Marte and Carroll down a little bit. I can see him, you know, maybe, I don't know about leading off, but maybe number two in the order, scoring a good amount of runs, all those steals. So yeah, I think that's the way he provides value. And, you know, probably top 15 might be a little high when we're talking about, you know, guys like Rosarena and Eloy Jimenez and kind of that range right now. But I think he's definitely due for a nice little jump here in 2023. It needs some playing time, but I really like him a good amount as well. Like, he's definitely one to watch this year.
Yeah, I agree. Man, that's some fun names for sure.
Yeah, I guess I think Ward can jump up. I think Ward could flirt. You know, I think Ward could flirt with top 15. Like, I think the profile is that good all around. I think he could. I don't see any prospects really getting in there right away. Like, you know, Colton Cowser will debut early. I don't think he's top 50, jumps up to that. Maybe down the road, maybe, but I don't see him jumping up there quite yet. Obviously, Drew Jones is too far away. He won't debut this year or even next year. You know, a buy low, this is kind of a little bit different, but, you know, Alex Kirilloff, we both have down here. Do you have Kirilloff or no? All you do, but I do.
I don't. No, I like Kirilloff. He's not far out, but
yeah, he's a great buy low for me. And maybe would you say Newt Barr's a sell high? Or I think we both think that Newt Barr's a good player, right?
Yeah.
But would you consider Newt Barr more of just like a hold, or would you try to sell high given all the hype around him right now? I mean, it can't be, you know, bad just to, you know, see what you can get for him.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much hype right now that I would at least explore and see, because there's some good opportunities that you could get for him, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm all about that.
I mean, according to the fan voting, quote unquote, allegedly, that MLB.com did, or one of their shows, I forget exactly which what it was, but had him as what, the fourth ranked right fielder above Acuna and those guys. So
that's, yeah, wild.
Hype. I don't know how much legitimacy there is to that, but yeah, that was pretty crazy to see. And obviously that's just clickbait. Don't take that seriously. But like, I don't think fans would even vote him fourth. Like, I don't even think that's even true. But regardless, the hype right now is very high. So it can't hurt just to, you know, float him out there and you say, hey, he's available, come make your offer and have those conversations. Can't hurt. All right. I think that's going to wrap us up, though. That was a lot of fun. We could have gone probably another whole hour on some of the names even further down. There's a lot of fun here, but we will cap it at that. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at EricRoss04. Chris is at RotoClegg. Our show is at Toolshed Pod. Check out all of our written work at, for me, Fantrax, FTN, and my Patreon. For Chris, at Pitcher List, at Fantasy Pros, and over on his Substack as well. So go check out that. Subscribe there as well. And we will catch you next time for what we're doing, our starting pitcher prospects. Oh, that'll be a fun episode, of course. Getting into the pitchers now, that's always a great time. So we'll see you then. But until then, everyone take care.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.